This podcast is brought to you by Learn Prime. Start your journey to becoming a great developer at learn.thoughtbot.com.
San Francisco, I'm assuming.
Like the city of?
Right. Pretty much just, you know, cable cars and K-cups. That's all we do now.
Yeah.
And rampant mental illness. Hey, everybody, this is Mark in San Francisco.
And this is Gordon in Boston.
And this is Build Phase.
Yeah, so we have gotten a few emails recently, which has been awesome. Let's go the easy one first, right? So I got an email. Let me pull it up. Hold on. So I got an email from Nicholas, who claims that he's our only listener in Chile, I think?
Chile.
Chile, sorry. So he was listening to the last one where we were talking about tips and tricks, and he brought up a couple other Vim-related things, right? So the first one being that so he wanted to point out that you can actually do you can actually get some really good auto-completion inside Vim for Objective-C stuff. There's actually a Vim plugin called Clang Complete that uses Clang to power the autocomplete stuff. It's pretty easy to install if you're using Vim stuff, Vundler or whatever. And like, I used that and it worked really well. That the bottleneck for me was always like I always had to jump back into Xcode to do any kind of interface stuff, core data stuff. And I never really had, or debugging stuff. I never had a good way to add files to the index, you know, which seems pretty important.
Yeah.
Like if I was the only one doing it, I could probably write some scripts that just call out to, you know, LLVM or whatever. But it's just so much overhead. And I never found a real good way to ensure that like I could do stuff in Vim and then you could do stuff in Xcode on the same project, because my editor choice shouldn't limit your editor choice at all.
Right.
And then the other thing he brought up is that he mentioned one other Vim emulator for Xcode, and there's actually another one, but so he brought up VIEMU. I don't know if that's supposed to be Vimu, V-I-E-M-U. I don't know.
Yeah, they should have just called it Vimulator.
Yeah, Vimulator sounds better. But V-I-E-M-U is maybe V-I-E-M-U. God, dude, I don't know how to say this stupid fucking
V-I-E-M-U. I like
V-I-E-M-U.
That.
I don't know. Yeah. It's for pay though, right? So it's a paid plugin that it's been on Visual Studio for a long time, and they have plugins for other editors, other IDEs as well. And the website is awful. The website's awful, but sorry, Mark is sending me pictures of Emu in the back channel. So disrupting my flow, man. But so they actually have a track record with Vim emulation, and they've been pretty highly regarded. But I think it's like $100 or something to purchase a license for this and then download it and then use it. And so I haven't tried it, mainly because it is a for pay thing and XVim is free and open source, and I kind of like that better. I actually have a license. There's another one called Vicious, which is a much better name.
That's an awesome name.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah. So there's another one called Vicious that works really well. It's actually an Xcode plugin that's written all in Lua, I guess. So the whole thing is actually in Lua with like a thin wrapper to get it to work inside Xcode. And that one was really great, but it failed my immediate test for kind of Vim emulation, which is CIW. So it doesn't know about text objects, so it didn't know about like a word object, so it couldn't just change the entire word. I type CIW and the Vim emulator barfs, then I'm It's not. I use that a million times a day, so I'm not going to – it's not really going to work for me. But it felt more stable. Like, XVim isn't necessarily unstable. Like, I'm actually surprised at how little XVim crashes for me, given what it's doing in the background. But their claim is that because it's all in Lua, it's Vicious is going to be more stable than XVim is going to be. But the development also seems slower, and it's not on GitHub, so I can't watch the development. Like, I actually watch the XVim repo, so I see everything happening. I get emails all the time about it. And I can't do that with Vicious. And for something that I rely on as heavily as, like, a Vim emulator, knowing that it's under active development and being able to watch the development seems pretty important to me.
Is Vicious a paid product?
Yeah, I don't remember how much it costs. It's not expensive. $20.
Not
so
bad.
No. So it's not expensive at all. That VIEMU is, yeah, $100. So I don't know. It looks like this one VIEMU has a trial period, so maybe I should give it another shot, see how it works. But I just don't have a lot of incentive to try another one when XVim works so well for me and does everything that I want it to do.
So we got another email here from Alex. It says, hello, Mark and Gordon. Love the podcast so far. Oh, thanks, Alex. And hope to hear your opinion on self.variable equals nil versus underscore variable release in the next podcasts. I know, Arc is the thing and we don't have to worry about it anymore, which is awesome. But still, on some of the projects, I'm stuck with legacy setup and have to use manual reference counting. Gordon, do you remember manual reference counting?
I do.
Back in the time of the dinosaurs?
Yeah, not fondly, but I do have a memory of doing it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually currently trying to remember what the proper way to write a dealloc method in manual reference counting was. So he's saying, should you be going through the synthesized setter to nil out an instance variable, or should you access it directly and release it and then nil it out?
I feel like, he's asking if you should just do like self.foo equals nil, or should you do underscore foo release underscore foo equals nil. I feel like I always did underscore foo release underscore foo equals nil.
Yeah, I think I did as well, but looking back now, I'm not sure why. Because if you go through the synthesized setter and set something to nil, it's going to release the old one first and then just assign the new one to nil. I mean, reassign it to nil after the old object has been released.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure either, other than that's the way I saw it done everywhere else when I was learning and we had to do MRR. Everywhere,
right.
Anyway.
Yeah, there was a lot of discussion about this back in the day. It was one of those things that people would argue on the tutor about.
Yeah, just like constantly. Like it was dot syntax and
yeah.
How do you release stuff inside dealloc?
Yeah, we should talk about dot syntax at some point, just for an hour. Just go on and on about when to use it, when not to use it.
Yeah, I don't know. So do you think it's...
I think you probably can't go wrong just accessing the instance variable. You know, like that's probably the safest approach.
Right.
Just manually release that thing, set it to nil.
Right. Theoretically, that's basically what you're doing inside self.foo equals nil.
I'm sure there's some issue here that we're forgetting.
Yeah.
That
I'm positive of it.
That someone will remind us of.
Right.
Email us, buildphase@thoughtbot.com, because I'm sure we're screwing this up.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's pretty obvious that just we don't even think about this stuff. Not the dealloc stuff, at least. I mean, I think memory management, you still have to know under the underlying concepts of what's happening when you have an object, you know what I mean? But like just knowing when an object's going to be released, knowing when it isn't, knowing how long to expect something to stick around. Like, that kind of stuff you definitely have to know, and that's obviously stuff that we have to think about constantly. But like that's the kind of crap that Arc solved for us a few years ago. And like, I had no problem just being like, cool, sweet, I'm going to free up this part of my own memory now. Like, you know, like I just don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about how an object is going to be released, just knowing that it is going to be released.
Right. So you're still very aware of like the life cycles of objects. And
yeah, totally.
Like, you know, Arc is not a free pass to just not think about your object graph in that way. So you know, it's not cycle management. It's just
right
taking some of the workload off of you.
Right. Well, it's like the using self inside blocks thing, right? Like once you start thinking about the way that actually is working, like if you don't know, basically don't use self inside blocks is the kind of general rule of thumb, right? Because it's probably going to create a retained cycle between the block and self. So the self is holding on to the block, and then the block is holding on to self. And so now you have a retained cycle, and neither one's going to go away, and now you got a memory leak.
Right.
And it's one of the few places under Arc where it's just really easy to create a memory leak. I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about memory management. And the under Arc, the example that they had to come up with in order to show a retained cycle that wasn't just like using self inside a block, the example that they had to use was so incredibly convoluted, just because Arc just takes care of like 99% of the things you would ever possibly do. So it was like this really specific thing where you had to go through this specific set of things and then you would end up with a retained cycle. But
there must be something coming to like the compiler or to address that, because it's one of those things it's just like retain and release now. It's like every time I want to write a block and I have to reference some instance variable on myself in it, I have to do the, you know, underscore underscore weak type of self, weak self equals self dance. And in some cases I've had to create a strong reference to the weak reference inside the block in the event that the block is fired and that weak instance has gone away, which just makes things even worse.
Yeah, so Justin Sparsummers, you say?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think
Justin Sparsummers has a libxt Objective-C, basically, libxt OBJC library on GitHub that they use like in Reactive Cocoa and whatever. And it actually has these really cool macros set up for weakify. So it's like a weakify macro that creates, so you just pass in self, right? So you say weakify self, and then now self, every time you use self, it's actually a weak reference. And then they also have a strongify self, so that every time now you use self, it's a strong reference again. And so like the idea is that outside the block you do weakify self, and then inside the block you do strongify self. And that, so that takes care of that dance for you to a certain extent, but you still have to call those. And they're doing some crazy stuff where like those macros, like the macros that you set up, the way you type it out is at weakify paren self paren and at strongify paren self paren, but the at symbol is protected. Like you can't just make macros, you can't define stuff with the at symbol in Objective-C. So what they're doing is the macro actually starts with a try statement but leaves off the at symbol, so that when the macro compiles, it compiles to at, it's actually turning out to be at try whatever the rest of the macro is, but you're writing at weakify, so it looks like it's a system call and it totally isn't. And it's one of the most awesomely hacky things I think I've ever
seen.
That's
so clever. So impressed.
But yeah, so there's a warning that I was just made aware of maybe a month ago. There's a warning that you can actually turn on Clang, Warn, Objective-C, Implicit, Retain, Self. If you turn that on, it'll actually give you warnings, compiler warning. I think this is new as of Xcode 5. But it'll give you compiler warnings for the block stuff, right? Like if you use self inside of a block, it'll give you a warning that it's implicitly retaining self there inside the block.
Is this different from the warning that reads something like captured something or other is likely to lead to a retain cycle? Because that warning's been around for a while.
No, yeah, I think this is different.
But it doesn't work in all cases. Like it doesn't catch cases where you will actually have a retain cycle all the time.
Right.
But you'll end up with abandoned memory, and somehow the static analyzer can't catch some cases, but it can others.
Yeah.
I'm not really clear on how that works.
This may have been around longer, but like it just popped up in my Twitter feed a few weeks ago. It was like, hey, if you turn this on, like it's not going to fix the problem, obviously, but if you turn this warning on, you're at least one step ahead in terms of catching these retain cycles with self inside blocks. But the fact that they can detect those and give you warnings, like that was one of my biggest disappointments from this most recent WWDC, is that they didn't add this kind of stuff to the compiler. Like it seems like it's a common enough dance. Like even if they always did the weakify, the weak reference, strong reference thing, even if they always did that, it's at least better than never doing it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. It seems like it's a common enough pattern that the compiler should be able to do this for me. And it should be just one of those other things that, like, I don't have, like the Alex statements, that I just don't have to think about anymore. I'm just going to use self because that's what makes sense. And the compiler is going to help me here.
Yeah, definitely. I'm still looking at this library extension thing that Justin has. You know about this extnil?
No.
It says, which is like NSNull, but behaves much more closely to actual nil in that it doesn't crash when sent unrecognized messages, which is awesome.
Is it still truthy?
Let me look at the declaration here. Okay, so it's actually an NS proxy subclass.
Oh, God.
That implements null, the class method. And then in the implementation, yes, I believe that it, yeah, so null still returns the singleton object, but he's using forward invocation. I'm not going to sit here and try to figure out how this works, but yes, I believe it's still truthy, but you can just send messages to it, like if you got it back in from a JSON parse or something, without having to do that safety check.
Right. So it's more like a cool.
Yeah, this is clever.
So it's more like an actual null object than either nil or NSNull are, right?
Yes.
It's kind of like the best of both. Like right. You got something back, so it's truthy. But
you can put it in a collection.
You can put it in a collection. And then you can also just send messages to it like it's anything else. And
it'll just be a no-op.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Today I learned.
There's the other email that we got. So William said that he's been looking for a job recently, and he interviewed at a couple of high profile companies, and that they were still doing manual retain release and saying that they couldn't move to Arc. Like, even while revamping their UI and doing a bunch of other refactorings, it sounds like that they were just like, no, we can't move to Arc. And I'm honestly having... He actually suggested maybe they should just extract the legacy code and then put the compiler flag on it to tell it, don't use Arc just on these files, which seems totally reasonable. And they didn't like that suggestion at all. I mean, what... I'm having trouble thinking of a reason why you shouldn't just move it all to Arc. Like at the worst case scenario, like extracting the legacy code into some kind of a, you know, like a, like even a CocoaPod, honestly. Like extracting the sub project, like extracting a CocoaPod just for the legacy stuff, and then telling in the CocoaPod just saying like requires Arc, no, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that assumes that that code is easily extractable, assuming that it's not all intertwined.
Yeah, but you could just pull those classes out. Like that's the thing. You could just pull those classes out and just put them in a CocoaPod, and it should pretty much just work like it would have, right? Like you're not changing the public interface. I'm just saying like take every class where you can't move it to Arc, don't change it at all, pull it out, put it in a CocoaPod, and then just tell that CocoaPod to not use Arc. You shouldn't have any problems, right? Because all the classes are still there. It doesn't care where the classes are.
Yeah. Maybe for some reason they have to support 4.3. That's
because they
the best reason I could think of.
That like 1% of their customer base is like incredibly important to them.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say.
I mean, 1% of all customers. Like that's not even their customers. Like I don't know what their numbers look like. But if it's under 1% for everybody that's on 4.3 still... I don't know.
just playing devil's advocate. You know how.
Yeah, you know no,
how
I do.
The business side of.
And this is why I'm
software development goes. Right. I mean,
this is why I'm not like a straight up business person, because I'm just like, right. Screw them.
Right. You're far too idealistic.
I
want to
use the new shiny stuff.
Yeah. We all do, Gordon. That's why we're here.
Yeah. So I don't know. Those sound like reasonable. That sounded like a reasonable suggestion to me.
I don't understand. He says here that they vehemently defend that they cannot move to Arc. I don't understand just, you know, putting your fingers in your ears and just like, nope, not using automatic reference counting. It's magic.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
I really don't either.
Like it's not going anywhere. It's the way of the future.
Right.
Way of the future.
I could understand it from the point of view of like, well, like we were saying before, right? You do still have to know some of the memory management stuff, at least the concepts, right? When stuff is going to be retained and released, you have to know that kind of stuff just so that your own code doesn't blow up on you and you don't run into weird edge cases with like, you know, like a class method that kicks off a background request and then the request finishes in the class and there's nothing holding on to the block or whatever. So the block fires and then you crash, whatever, you know, like threading, sure. Threading issues.
Sure.
So like you have to understand memory management to a certain extent, but, and so I kind of can see how maybe they're worried about people coming in and just doing crazy stuff without understanding memory management. Like maybe like this is the only thing I can think of, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
because they're forcing people to be explicit about it. Then they're forcing people to have a real solid understanding of what's happening.
I guess, but then you could make that argument for any new technology. That's like saying that we shouldn't be using GCD for concurrency because then people won't understand like threading.
Yeah.
And like, you know, thread pools and all the bad stuff that can come along with that. You know, priority inversion,
right?
All that fun stuff. Like saying that we shouldn't use these higher levels of abstraction because we won't understand how the lower levels work. But really, you still have to understand the high level concepts and just let the technology take care of the low level stuff for you.
Right. Well, and even beyond that, like we've said a couple times, like you're not going to just be able to just write code and write it in using Arc and just have it, like everything's not going to work. So like if you're trying to find people that know manual memory management coming in, then those same people are going to be able to work under Arc because the concepts are there, right? It's literally just less code that they have to write.
Right.
I mean, most of when I migrated a project to Arc and I ran into some weird problems with some of the, I think it was Core Graphics code, whatever, using CG colors versus UI colors. whatever. It's not important.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about like the issue where Arc will just like release it right out from under you, like you declare it, and by the next line it's already gone?
Yeah, if you put a I think if I remember the issue correctly, basically you just don't put CG color refs in a collection, because if you do like UI color, like I have a UI color and then I just do CG color, I call CG color on it. It does that and then like immediately releases the CG color. So you need to keep the UI color around and then only pass in this, only use the CG color when you're actually using the color, basically.
Right.
But like when I, other than that and like a couple other like weird issues, most of the transition to Arc was like a find and replace for the words retain, release, and like auto release, and just deleting those and then removing all my dealloc statements.
Wait, hold on. Did you not use the migration tool in Xcode?
No, I did. I did.
Oh,
I'm saying what it did was essentially, you know, I mean, just removing code. Like it was just all kind of like, it's not like it brought a couple new concepts with it, but it, for the most part, it's just like that code you're about to write. Just don't write it now. That's how you write Arc instead of.
Yeah, it just saves you from having to think about, A, what am I trying to do in this method? Like, what am I trying to achieve? And then that, like, extra meta layer of, like, oh, well, how do I keep all these objects around to do this thing that I want to do? So we've removed the latter. It still just makes me angry that people are just so, like, staunchly against new technology. It drives me nuts. Masochistic programmers.
Yeah, I don't get it. I really don't. So we had a project that we subcontracted out, and so I jumped on it, and it was written like 10 months ago, and it was all memory management, and it was just kind of like, or manual memory management, and it was just kind of like this immediate thing where I was like, wait a minute. Like I just started writing code, and I started writing it just like, of course this is Arc. This project's a month old. Of course it's Arc. And I just started writing stuff, and then I was like, wait a minute. Why does this say retain all over the place and auto release? It's like and so then I had to like stop and kind of like switch gears in my brain and be like, oh crap, okay. So I'm back in this I'm never going to be able to say this right. Manually, Jesus Christ.
Mike, you can't edit any of these out. I think you've screwed it up every time you've tried to say
every
it.
Every single time.
Manual memory management. Manual reference counting, will that help? So we go automatic reference counting and manual reference counting?
Yeah, but that implies like using retain count. Right?
Yeah. Shh. You're going to invoke the ire. Bill Bumgarner.
Which you should always do, right? That's what you should. That's how you check to see if something's. Pro tip.
No, go ahead. Extol your terrible wisdom. Pro tip, don't listen to Gordon. Don't use retain count.
In fact, forget that it exists.
Right.
Because it literally doesn't do what it says it does.
Well, it does, but it's not accurate the way you think it's going to be.
Right.
Because other parts of the framework are also.
Right. It totally does what it says it does. It's just not useful at all.
No, to you as the client code maker. No, bad. Isn't there like a website like don'tuseretaincount.com?
I think it's when should I use retain count?
Oh, and then it just says never. Of course. Yeah, it's when to use retaincount.com. And it just huge letters, never. There's pretty much never a good reason to use retain count. And then there's a great explanation as to why not. So, yeah, go check that out.
Yeah, actually, it's like it's like a joke website, but like super useful.
But it's no joke.
No
serious
joke.
Serious shit.
Don't use retain count. What else? Do we have more to say on memory management?
Yeah, just use Arc.
Right.
Come on, people.
Right. I keep saying it, but like I don't understand why you wouldn't. I totally get being reluctant to migrate existing code bases.
Absolutely.
I totally understand that. Like, especially if the code base itself is complex and is, you know, doing a bunch of crap. Like, the older the code base is, the harder it's going to be to transfer to anything new. You know what I mean? Like, that's true for everything. I don't understand not being willing to talk about migrating to Arc, but I understand why you would be reluctant to migrate to Arc for the entire code base. I don't understand how William's suggestion of, well, why don't you kind of segregate the legacy stuff and have the compiler not use Arc there, but then all the new code can be written in Arc. That makes total sense to me because, you know, I mean, so I guess the problem there would be you have to do a context switch in your head, moving, you know, what class am I in? Is this a class that uses Arc or not? Although then I'd say that you shouldn't, you know, there's the open-close principle, right? Like, you shouldn't have that much churn in that legacy code anyway. Like, you should probably be spending most of your time in new code.
Right, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I saw a tweet from one of the engineers over at Square recently that said that all of their applications are in the process of being migrated to Arc.
Right.
And so they're just taking it, like, a class at a time. Like, if there's enough work going on in there, convert it to Arc, throw that compiler flag on
totally. I'd actually go the other way, right? I would turn on Arc for the whole project and then go through the painstaking process to turn off Arc for all the classes so that then when I need to move them away from Arc, I'm just deleting that compiler flag.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the context switching sucks. But
yeah, totally.
Necessary evil. That's the best route.
Kind of
just deal with it for a while.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like you're handcuffing yourself a little bit. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I think probably the biggest problem for that, like having a huge legacy code base that isn't and will never be moved to Arc, is that there's a whole bunch of developers that are never going to have worked in a memory. They're never going to have worked in a manually memory managed application. Stop laughing. You get what I'm saying?
No, I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean? So like you're keeping yourself from hiring possibly the best people that you could hire based on this single point of restriction, right? Like,
yeah.
Like restricting your hiring pool to the people that, to only people that know how to do MRR, which I can't even say that right. Jesus. Restricting your hiring pool to just those people is leaving out a bunch of people that may be incredibly smart guys, girls,
people.
Men, women.
Humans.
Yeah, humans.
Smart humans.
Right. They may be incredibly smart people, and just they don't have any experience doing that. And so now you're not going to hire them.
Right.
Because of that, which seems silly.
Yeah, if you're hiring the right people and they're brilliant, they could learn manual memory management if they need to. It's not difficult. You know, as long as you're hiring sufficiently capable people, it's not a difficult concept. Like, there's bigger fish to fry.
Well, I don't think there's anything in his email to suggest that he didn't get a job at these places because he didn't have that under his belt, but it just seems like, I don't know.
Right. I was just speaking to your point about missing out on talented people, but with this restriction. It's not a restriction. It's just if the people you're trying to hire are smart enough, they could learn this. It's just they don't need to.
They don't need to, right. Right. So I guess it's more for me as like someone that, like, if I was looking for a job and it was this huge legacy code base, and it was all in Arc. It was all in manual memory management. It was all using Jesus. Never. This isn't gonna work. We have to figure out a new word for this.
You did it that time.
If the code base was like that and the people were reluctant to change it, that would be kind of like a flag to me as a potential employee. Like, why are they unwilling to migrate to Arc?
Yeah, I think willingness to embrace new technology is important in the interview process. Like, picking up on that. Oh, yeah.
On both sides, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Embrace
technology, way of the future.
So if you have any more comments, we'd love to hear them. You can email us buildphase@thoughtbot.com. And we're also on Twitter and app.net @thoughtbot.
So show notes for this episode will be available at learn.thoughtbot.com/buildphase/6.
And this episode was recorded and edited by Mike Manner and produced by Chad Pytel.